Parshas Korach highlights the first documented earthquake in Tanakh. So it's an opportunity to take a few steps back and ponder the role of earthquakes, not just in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but in particular earthquakes that occur in Eretz Yisrael. The first recorded earthquake possibly actually predates Korach, and it occurs in the story of Parshas Vayera, the utter annihilation of Sodom and Gomorrah. But it's in some ways more than an earthquake, because it isn't a split or a crevice in the ground, but rather the entire plate, to use the earthquake metaphor or the earthquake imagery, is almost lifted and overturned. Hashem is hafech et Sodom v'Amorah, upside down. Many of the measures are dispatched from the heaven, esh v'gafra esh, fire and sulfur from the heavens. And it's still part of that era in which the dynamic between man and his natural surroundings is so tightly woven that when humanity deteriorates morally, he literally drags nature down with him. So nature has to be recreated. In this case, nature isn't recreated in the way that it is during the Mabul, but it is left intentionally sparse and barren and salted and untillable and dry and dead, and one day will be revamped when Mashiach comes and the entire ecological system is rejuvenated. But it certainly has overtones of an earthquake type of an event. Now, what makes the earthquake in Korach so symbolic and iconic, even though it occurs outside of Eretz Yisrael, is that first of all, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu creating something. Moshe refers to it as a bria, v'im bria yivra Hashem. And the Ramban already struggles with its identification as a bria because earthquakes happen from time to time. The Ramban believes that this earthquake was different in as much as the earth opened and then closed and consumed Korach, as opposed to your classic earthquake in which the earth shakes and repositions itself, and the natural valleys and canyons and mountains and rivers and lakes emerge in the wake of the reshifting of these plates. Here it was an opening and a closure immediately, as if the earth was swallowing Korach. But what is interesting is that the great earthquake that occurs during the days of the king Uzziah, which is alluded to, not really documented in Tanakh, it's alluded to on several occasions, it's alluded to in Divrei Hayamim, it's alluded to by Yeshaya, it's alluded to by Amos. Amos begins his Nebuah, and the Nebuah of Amos is dated 2 years before the great earthquake. Earthquakes have that effect that it becomes part of our timing patterns and part of our timeline, before the earthquake, after the earthquake. And it surrounds Uzziah acting in a manner that's very similar to Korach. In Divrei Hayamim, Beis, Perech Havav, we read of Uzziah who tramples or invades the Beis HaMikdash, even though he wasn't a Kohen, and he wants to be involved in Kitara's offering, even though he's not a Kohen. So his crime is extremely, extremely similar to Korach's crime. And Yeshaya describes the seraphim, the angels, who, at least in this context, have fire-consuming capabilities. They can cause a srifa. And there is an earthquake type of event. Again, the Tanakh doesn't really document it in such detail, but it's referred to, alluded to by Yeshaya, many of Yeshaya's imageries, Vayanu Amos Hasipim Mikol HaKoreh. This is the Haftarah in Yeshaya, or from Yeshaya, we read in Parshas Yisro, that the foundations of the building move. Amos himself, as I mentioned, his Nevuah is dated as 2 years before the Raj, and he describes many images that have to do with earthquakes. Again, the foundations are moving. It's important to know that in this case as well, there's a tsunami-like event where the waters are being spilled onto the land, both in Amos as well as in Yeshaya. In Amos it's in Parakeh. In Yeshaya it's also in Parakeh, where there's a tsunami event associated with this earthquake. And modern archaeology has traced this earthquake to the Beit Shan, to the northern area. So it's interesting that there are two events in which people challenge the kahuna, and both of those events elicit a divine earthquake. And I talked about this a little bit in the shiur I gave about the Medrash, that some people in Korach and Uzi had a difficult time accepting divisions and specializations and selections. And why are the Kohanim selected? And certainly in a universalist world, any type of differentiation sounds discriminatory and sounds racist, rather than realizing that our world operates on and is stabilized by divisions and clear roles and clear, and as long as they're not exploitative and they're not manipulative, they're necessary to stabilize human experience. And the metaphor is they're necessary to provide that stability for human society, for human religion, for human interaction. And by destabilizing those, you're essentially destabilizing the foundations, and it's akin to destabilizing the very ground we walk on, which is itself divided into plates and divided into continents and divided into land and sea, and as I mentioned in the Medrash, day and night. And by questioning these structures, you're essentially destabilizing the core of human experience. So it's these two earthquakes, one which occurs in the desert, one which is a bit non-standard, one which occurs in Eretz Yisrael, which is much more typical. Fast forward to the period right around the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, and you witness many earthquakes, some larger, some smaller, occurring right around that time. 92 BCE, 31 BCE, 115 CE afterwards. And we would have to assume, that this is part of the exile of the Jewish people. It doesn't just have a national or geographic component, but it has an ecological component and a topographical component, and by extension, more of a cosmological component. The day that we left Yerushalayim was a day in which the world stopped, and the world was thrust into cataclysmic contractions. And Jews leaving Yerushalayim is not just a national tragedy, but it is a cosmic tragedy, because our position in Yerushalayim is not just nationalistically important, but we are fueling human prosperity and human welfare, and we have that universal role. And not only that, but more geographically and ecologically, when Jews leave Eretz Yisrael suffers. And when Jews return, Eim Habanim Smecha, Eretz Yisrael is happy, and it renews and reinvigorates its lost fertility. So it's not unexpected to someone that views history through prophetic lenses and assumes an integration between ecology and geography and climate conditions and weather patterns. It would be surprising that there shouldn't be earthquakes surrounding, because this is a seismic shift, this is a tectonic shift in history, and you'd expect the earthquakes to accompany that. And probably you could bring that same viewpoint and perspective to the earthquake in 362 CE. Julian the Apostate, a Roman emperor, much of Rome has already converted to Christianity. And Julian is referred to as Julian the Apostate, who reverses and feels that Christianity will lead to the collapse of Rome and restores pagan rituals and pagan interest to the Roman Empire. And therefore, he's castigated by the emerging Christian establishment. And part of his restoration to the glory of ancient Rome and ancient Hellenism is he instructs the Jews to rebuild the temple. Part of it, he wants to stick it to the Christians by asserting that the Jews are still God's people and they can rebuild their temple. So he allows the Beis HaMikdash to be restored. It takes a lot of time. And then at some point, there are balls of fire that erupt from the foundations of the Mikdash and render the place inaccessible and unapproachable, and halt the construction. And it's not clear, but many modern archaeologists believe this is a earthquake. It's not just mysterious balls of fire. And of course, to the Christians, this corroborates the fact that they are chosen and the Jews are discarded, because this halts the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. But taking this story outside of the polemic between Julian and Christians, or polytheistic Rome and newly emergent monotheistic Christianity, it's clear that this was not yet the right time to build the Beis HaMikdash from a Jewish standpoint, purely within our own narrative. And the earthquake is a signal from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that this is a acceleration of redemption, that is premature and has to be halted. So earthquakes have that opportunity to create not just stability and hierarchical orientation within the Jewish experience in the selection of Kohanim, but also historical equilibrium. And when history advances too quickly, as it does in the 4th century CE, an earthquake halts that redemptive process. Probably the two earthquakes in the modern era of Israel that are probably best known is the infamous earthquake in 1837, which levels Tzfat. Very tragically, 4,000 to 5,000 Jews in Tzfat are killed in the earthquake, probably 700 to 1,000 Jews in Tveria. It leads to an interesting migration. Obviously, it's a very tragic event. It levels Tzfat. It takes about 10 years to reconstruct. It takes a lot of philanthropy. One could say it's one of the first philanthropic moments where monies are delivered from two or three major philanthropists to restore Tzfat. It takes 10 years. It also has the impact of resettling a lot of Jews from the north, and they start to settle Hebron and rebuild southern areas. It's hard to find any divine message in this earthquake of Tzfat. Jews had begun to settle Tzfat. Tzfat had established itself as one of the major cities and centers of Jewish activity, and it is a very devastating event. The event of 1927 is less of a Jewish event. It targets Yerushalayim, Ramla, Tveria, Shechem. There are about 130 Jews who are killed in Jerusalem, 130 people, but a lot more are killed in other precincts. It doesn't lead to the type of carnage that occurred in Tzfat in 1837. It does lead to a lot of Jews moving out of the Muslim quarter of Yerushalayim and settling broader areas of Yerushalayim. The earthquake, as well as the pogroms of Tarpat, are responsible for Jews distancing themselves from the Muslim population. But these are the two modern-day earthquakes that shake Eretz Yisrael. And, of course, living in this Eretz Yisrael, even without the recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally shakes the ground on which we walk to shape history, we're living on multiple fault lines, and of course it's always a specter and a fear, and especially as we transition or segue into modern forms of construction, people are trying to be more sensitive to construct homes in a manner that will allow allow safety and security in the event, chas v'shalom, of a major earthquake. Zechariah Yud-Dalet describes an earthquake that will occur during the end of days, during a Mashiach type of event, which is very often associated with the wars of Mashiach, the wars which some refer to as Gog and Magog. So in the end of Perek Yud-Dalet, it talks about flesh melting or disintegrating, tongues fading in mouths, and then Pesach Yud Gimel, V'haya b'yom ahu tiyeh mehumas Hashem rabba b'hem. People will hold hands, there will be some destabilizing event. There will be great wars. There will be great gatherings in Yerushalayim of armies. And earlier in the parak, Hashem is described as a warrior who's standing on Har HaZeitim, and Har HaZeitim gets split in half with a big valley in between. And that certainly sounds like an earthquake. And just in case you don't make that association, Pasuk Hey creates a very clear association. V'nastem geharai, people will flee from that event to a place called Atzal, and they will flee kasher nastem ipnei harash bimei Uziyahu melech Yehuda, as they fleed during the earthquake in the days of Uziyah. This is probably one of the most direct references to an earthquake during the days of Uziyah, which is not really described during the description of Uziyah's reign, but is referred to by Yeshaya, and is referred to by Amos, and alluded to by Zechariah. It had etched such a clear memory in Jewish consciousness that it's a reference point to describe the cataclysms of Lesed Lavo and the wars. And obviously, those cataclysms are history reshapers. We believe the Messianic era will be a reshaping and a redistillation of history, of human experience. They're also militarily, practically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates shifts in the ground as part of the defeat of all these enemies that have gathered in Yerushalayim for these great wars. And it also has a topographical element, because those who stood in the mountainous regions of Yerushalayim noticed that Har HaBayit itself is depressed, is lower than the surrounding mountains. And some of these topographical shifts lead to what the Pasuk describes as a raising or a lifting of Yerushalayim and of the Har HaBayit. So it will probably create some different altitudes and different ways of seeing and of relating to the Har HaBayit and to Yerushalayim. So it has multiple roles. The language of the Pasuk is in Pasuk Yud, V'rama v'yashva tachteah, that all the areas will be flattened and Yerushalayim will be raised. So it's clear that in Eretz Yisrael, earthquakes are not random events. They are meant to reinforce the notion of boundaries as stabilizing the human condition, as it does in Parshas Korach and it did for Uzziah. They're probably reflective of a general disintegration of land, nationhood, mikdash, sovereignty during the second Beis HaMikdash, and when the Jews prematurely attempt to build the third Beis HaMikdash in the 4th century, an earthquake halts that. We have experienced two earthquakes in the more modern era, 1837 in Tzfat, and 1927 in the Yericho Yerushalayim Shechem area primarily, though it affects Tiberia. We hope in Davin HaKadosh Baruch Hu that despite the fact that we're on several fault lines, the modern state of Israel does not ever have to experience those types of challenges and trauma of a modern earthquake. But we do expect that some earthquake-type event will occasion the wars described in Zechariah, hopefully will merit a messianic trajectory that may avoid some of those wars, and Chazal certainly hold out that promise that if we are meritorious, then the journey to Mashiach is going to be easier and calmer, more tranquil. Doesn't seem as if we've embarked on that trajectory, but we certainly ask and hope, and we expect of ourselves to try to labor. And who knows, maybe some of these earthquakes will be converted into metaphoric earthquakes rather than actual ones, but that depends a lot upon our behavior.